You're listening to Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, hello. Eddie Pascal here at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana, where we are settled in for the 2019 NFL Scouting Combine. And we are excited. We are very fired up. The entire squad is here. We are rolling deep. Shout out Adele one time. We are rolling deep to Indy. Let me paint a picture, if you will, real quick. Let me show you what we're working with my words. So we're here, and just like last year, we're next to our good friends at the Dallas Cowboys. They're to our left on our, I believe this would be our north side, if my directions are the best. They probably aren't, but let's call it our north side. Anyways, we're in a big pen, a media row, if you will, and most teams here have one table, a nice size backdrop, you know, very respectful of people's space and things of that nature. We do not have that. We have two tables that are stacked next to each other. So a long table. Think of like a table in like a throne room. That's kind of what we're at. Eight people deep. A backdrop that is put humbly, obnoxious sized. Looks great. And you very clearly know that we are here. Day one, coming in with a bang, very fired up. You know who else came in with a bang this morning? Is Raiders General Manager Mike Mayock. He started things off, literally the first coach or general manager to speak at the Combine this morning. So Mayock got things rocking and rolling at 9 a.m. East Coast time. That's six for you guys back home in California. And I got to say, I'm struggling a little bit. Not a big coffee guy. Had a coffee this morning. Had to get up, get geared up, ready to rock and roll. And we made it. We were out here at 7:30, 4:30 California time. And my goodness, Papa might need another coffee before this day is done. But it was Mayock. What's today, Travis? Producer Travis. Today's Wednesday, right?
Today's Wednesday.
Today is Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So Mayock comes in, does his thing, dominates the media session. Absolutely dominates. God, he's so good on camera. He's so good on camera. He's so well-spoken. We're going to get to what he had to say in a little bit. So Mike goes, he does his session with the national media, hits a couple spots along the way, goes Sirius, ESPN, talks to our local guys. And then it was time for our one-on-one. We know you guys love it. It's one of our favorite things here. We actually mixed up the location for the one-on-one today. So we are physically in Lucas Oil Stadium, in the stands, section 104, baby, row H, seats 6 and 8. That's where me and Mike were. And we got into a lot of good things. We had a good discussion. Gave me a hard time. Fun fact, Mike did not make fun of my hair today. So that's good. I would say that's a plus. Mike did not make fun of how much product I had in my hair. And I'm having a pretty good hair day, if I do say so myself. But didn't make fun of my hair. We touched on a lot of things. We touched on the defensive line group, the incoming class of defensive linemen. We touched on that. We talked about the inroads that Mike has really made. And when we talked to him in Mobile, one thing that he was really pushing was the transparency between the scouting department and the coaching staff. He said the number one mark of dysfunction in professional organizations is there is a lack of communication between those two staffs. So I asked him how have things been going in that regard, in terms of that very specific relationship, and he shared a little bit about on that, you know. And we just talked about evaluation, because at the end of the day, well, Mike is now the general manager of the Silver and Black, and he's wearing a million hats that kind of come with that title. He's an Italian evaluator. And so I wanted to know, really, what's the hardest position to evaluate? Where do you feel the strength of this team is? And with three first-round picks, there's a lot to discuss. So without further ado, here it is, our conversation from earlier today with General Manager Mike Mayock. Mike, you had your press conference with the national media this morning. You went from there, you did ESPN, Sirius, talked with the locals. You have any gas left in the tank?
Well, not after you made me walk all the way over here to sit in the friggin' chairs here when we could have done in 20 minutes to go over there, Eddie.
Well, that's Marcus. That's Marcus. You got to bring that up with him. The creator, the artiste, and I'm just a muse.
What's a muse?
Huh? You know, someone who inspires
him. I know what a muse is.
In all seriousness, Mike, you come from so many years being in the broadcast booth here. Now you're in the team suite. In terms of feel, how is that feel going to be different for you?
You know, when you talk about evaluating players, it's kind of the same thing. I can sit in my office and watch tape and grind tape and come to opinions about certain players the same way. But when you come here, what it used to be for me for almost 20 years was kind of getting to see all the head coaches and general managers and all these guys around the league that were my friends that I developed relationships with. And we talked about players and we shared information. What tape did you watch on this kid? Where do you have him? What kind of receiver is he? And now it's a little bit different, you know, and obviously I'm in a different position. I think the biggest change during the week is the time we get interviewing the kids, the players. We had two interviews last night. We're going to have eight more tonight, 60 overall. And I think you do a better job evaluating when you kind of figure out what makes the kid tick. And that's really the major challenge this week. We can measure the 40s. We can see how high they jump. All the measurables are easy to define. I think the hardest part is figuring out the kid himself.
You know, since we last spoke in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, obviously you have a better grasp of the roster and how the Raiders are looking into 2019 and beyond. When you've done that evaluation of the roster, has anything kind of surprised you or kind of thrown you like, oh, I perhaps wasn't expecting that?
It's kind of an evaluation of what do we have and where do we need to go from here. And, you know, we look at Derek Carr and watch how he developed in his first year with John Gruden. I thought as the year went on, he got better. Love to watch Jalen Richard catch the football out of the backfield. You know, things to watch Carl Joseph the last few games of the year. Eric Harris played really well as the season progressed. So I think the more film you watch, the more things jump out at you. And it just provides the basis for where we're going for the future.
You know, we've talked so much about that transparency you have, about that transparency between your staff and the coaching staff. So I got a bit of a two-part for you. One, how do you feel the inroads have been made in that particular relationship? And then I'm kind of just curious on how you and coach communicate. Do you like a standing, 2 o'clock at noon where you guys sit in the room and kind of throw thoughts off each other? How does that work?
Coach doesn't have a standing anything. But I mean, basically what I found with coach is the best thing to do is I get in the building at plus or minus 5:30 in the morning and he's always there. I mean, I can't beat him into the building. And I'll walk in with a cup of coffee and we'll sit down and talk. And nobody else is around or nobody's going to bother us at 5:30. And we sit there and sometimes it's 10 minutes and sometimes it's 3 hours. And we sit there and throw the film on and talk about our team and college players and free agency. So just about every day of the week, John Gruden and I are communicating. And I think the transparency between coaches and personnel staff is as good as I would have hoped for 2 months on the job. What's really been helpful for me personally is I can walk in the building and I can sit down with John. I can sit down with Paul Gunther. I can sit down with Richie Bisaccia. I can sit down with Greg Olson. I can sit down with Jimmy O'Neill. I could keep going. Tom Cable. I've known these guys, most of them, for 10, 15, 20, 25 years. So walking onto the, quote, coach's side of the building to me is natural. I'm a coach's son. That's natural to me. And I think it just kind of opens up the whole building. John's over on our side. We're arguing about players. We have free agency meetings where me and part of my staff is in there. We have draft meetings where the entire coaching staff comes in. John came in and presented to our coaching staff what his offensive philosophies are, had Paul Gunther in with the defensive staff. So I couldn't be more excited about the level of communication and transparency between the two staffs.
And you mentioned it a little bit earlier about the interview portion of this. How important, how vital are those interviews to really get a more clear idea of a picture of what a guy's made up, a prospect come into this situation?
I think the better you get to know what make a kid tick, the better you do evaluating. And I think one of the advantages we have is John Gruden, because when kids walk into the room and they see Chucky sitting there, it's like they almost forget all the stuff their agents have ingrained in them about their pre-programmed answer. And John's pretty good at chirping and getting in their grill a little bit and challenging them. And so I think having John Gruden on staff and being the head guy really helps us in the interview process.
Do you have to kind of guard against falling in love with a guy's measurable? Because every year, I mean, you obviously know better than any of us, you see the guys that run the fastest 40s, that jump the highest, that bench the most, and, you know, sometimes they don't translate to becoming the best pro players. Where's that kind of line where you have to toe and this guy's a great athlete, but we'll see how it translates on Sunday?
It's a cross-check. The combine is a cross-check, and I think you always have to go back to the film. And I used to tell Rich Eisen and all my guys at the NFL Network that, you know, it's not a story when fast guys run fast or slow guys run slow. You expect them to. What the story is when a guy you think is a 4.6 40 guy on film comes out here and runs 4.43, and now you're going, uh-oh, am I wrong on my evaluation? or is it manufactured speed that he learned at some camp? So whenever there's a question, a conflict between what you saw on film and what you see out here, that's the cross-check. You got to go back and reevaluate. You get your area scout, you get your cross-check scout, you sit down and say, wait a minute, this wide out from XYZ just ran 4.45, and we all thought he was a 4.6 guy. What is he? Let's go back to the film. So I think it's a wonderful cross-check.
You know, you were speaking about the defensive line group in this class earlier today, and you said it's probably one of the best you've seen in the past 10 years. Yeah. When you look at the group as a whole, really what stands out to you about these guys across the board?
I mean, it's all about rushing the quarterback in today's day and age. I mean, let's face it, we're a pass-first league, and you got to affect a quarterback. And I think when you look at this draft, whether it's outside edge rushers or inside rushers, sub rushers, nickel rushers, they're out there. And it's not just in the first round. It's 3, 4, 5 rounds deep. So we're excited because, you know, that's obviously one of our areas of need. And we think both free agency and the draft, we're going to have an opportunity to address it.
What do you think the hardest position to evaluate is?
Ironically enough, and I played safety in the NFL, and for me, it's safeties and linebackers. And it's because of the way colleges play football now. So I can put a safety tape on, and sometimes I can watch 4 or 5 full games of a safety and not really know what kind of player he is. Whereas I can watch a guard or tackle or a defensive lineman, and you know 2 or 3 full tapes, you have a real good feel on them. With a safety, they sit in quarters coverage. I call it squat and grab. A lot of them just stand there, squat at 10 yards, grab receivers. You can't see them cover. You don't see a lot of the traits that you want to see in an NFL safety. And linebacker is similar because a lot of the college linebackers are lateral guys, smaller, quicker lateral guys. In the NFL, you still have to come downhill and take on. So you can't knock a kid for being coached a different way than you're going to coach him in the NFL. So the evaluation process is a little different today than it was even 5, 6, 8 years ago.
You know, this might be a question that you probably have a better answer to once the draft is kind of in the rearview mirror, but I'm curious, how do you, now as a general manager, you look at the value of a pick compared to what a team needed. So hypothetically, you have a second round grade on a kid and he's sitting there in the fourth round, but it's not a position in need. How do you kind of toe that line of, okay, he might not need this guy, but the value might be too good to pass up?
I think sometimes you gotta be careful on diluting your roster by passing up on higher rated kids. So this year for us, we have so many needs that I think the goal is to go out there and just pick great football players. Pick the best football players we can find because we have positions of need everywhere. And I think then it just becomes, as you go on and you become a better football team, I think the answer to that question is common sense. If you have two players that are similarly rated, one's position of need, then obviously you go position of need. However, like you said, if there's a guy rated up here and a guy down here, you really don't want to dilute the overall talent of your roster.
So I appreciate your time. We'll get you out here on this mic. You've been here in Indy for years and years.
Yeah.
Do you have a go-to? So we're big St. Elmo's guys. We love the shrimp cocktail. Do you have a restaurant that is at the top of the to-do list for Mike Mayock here?
Well, I like St. Elmo's. I like steak and shake if I'm just in a mood for a quick in and out. Richie Bisacci, our special teams coach, was mad at us last night because Gruden and I were coming from the player interviews at about 10:15, 10:30, and Bisacci was in the steak and shake banging on the glass, and we didn't come in and join him. So I think Richie was a little pissed off at us.
You a shrimp cocktail guy?
If I need to clear my nostrils out, yeah.
Yeah, same with us. Well, Mike, we appreciate your time, and good luck this week.
Thanks, Eddie.
There he is. Mike Mayock, you heard from the man himself. And a quick programming note before we get into victory formation. So we're doing live pods. Well, I guess I can say live, Trav. We're doing it live. Who cares? We're doing live pods. So today, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So for those of you guys listening at home, Coach Gruden goes through the media gauntlet tomorrow. So our one-on-one will be with him tomorrow morning following all that. We'll do another pod, talk about that. Then another one on Friday. TBD on the timing on Saturday depends on kind of the way that our workload is. So we'll guys keep you updated on that. But we move on to everyone's. And Trav, does this segment have a sponsor yet?
It does not.
It does not. I didn't think it did. Anyways, into everyone's favorite segment, it's Victory Formation with me, Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, and a man who has been just overwhelmed with joy. I've never seen him so happy. And actually, he was kind of angry this morning. He was outraged. He needed to get his questions in. He had to get them in. Our junior draft analyst, our senior esports correspondent, our executive director of player personnel evaluation, none other than Marvin Gaye and Chardonnay, Kyle Martin Media. Kyle, how angry on a scale of 1 to 10 were you this morning?
Dude, I had so much pent-up rage. It was uncontrollable. I had to let it out. You know I love the draft. You know I love draft evaluation. The combine as a whole is one of my favorite events of the year. And when Mike Mayock goes to the stand, I'm not going to let anybody try and get in my way of asking the man a question.
I don't know who the guy was. Everyone go back and watch the video on Raiders.com and tweet at us if you can figure out who it was that Kyle humiliated. This poor guy was trying to get a question into Mike, and you wanted no part of it.
No, I mean, I wanted a follow-up question, and that's our guy. You know, I hit him with an Allen Iverson on the Ty Lue. I hit him with a step over.
You humiliated him.
Good.
I was uncomfortable.
Oh, I didn't know it had that kind of there was that tension there.
No, I mean, no tension. I was humiliated for him. Like, you know when you, like, watch a fight, a UFC fight or a boxing match or whatever, and you can tell that, this guy's just getting his brains beat in. There's no way he's going to come back from, a swift kick. That's what you did to that poor gentleman.
To be fair, though, after Mayock left the podium and Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Denver Broncos, came to the stand, I asked about four times. You know where you start a question, you're like,
Yeah, and then someone comes in.
Yeah, so I was humiliated at least 3 to 4 times after everybody left. But
you know what's great about your humiliation of that guy is it was so early. That your body clock, that was a 6 a.m. humiliation you delivered.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's bright and early.
Like,
I love my sleep.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have been up in California to deliver that humiliation.
That's probably why I was so cranky.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Probably did have something to do with it.
Yeah, but good questions. Asked him about obviously what to expect this week, what he's looking for in his, quote, Raiders star, which is, the player that fits the mold of the silver and black, right? Whether that's strength, mental aptitude, anything in regards to his love of the game. He's got a vision, right? Him and John Gruden, and he's going to stick to that plan going forward.
Yeah, one thing we'll get into a little bit more. One thing that I guess my big takeaway from hearing Mike talk and then talking to him afterwards too is he really talked up this defensive line class. Said it was the best he's probably seen in a decade. And for a team that had 13 sacks last year, that was 32nd out of 32 teams in getting after the quarterback and taking him down behind the line of scrimmage, that is good news.
That's grisly.
It was grisly. The stat is grisly. The news is good.
Yeah, very, very positive news. I mean, that's the best part about, all these mock drafts I've been watching is that any guy that we could potentially take, whether it's with 4, 24, 27 – chances are that they're going to be a bona fide pass rusher.
A stud.
Yeah. There's so much talent, as Mayock said, best class in the last 10 years. But we've been linked, so many people that we've discussed in the past few weeks, Rashawn Gary, Cleveland Farrell, Jalen Ferguson, all these guys, right? Josh Allen. Any of them are going to be
Bosa. I know that we haven't spent a lot of time on Bosa just because I think we're both of the mind that he's likely going to be off the board at 4 when Gruden and Mayock get on the clock. But, I mean, also another bona fide, quote-unquote, stud. I mean, let me ask you this, as our junior draft guy. Hypothetically, Bosa's off the board. You're sitting at 4. I'm not asking for the pick.
No.
But I'm saying, who do you think kind of fits best in that 4 slot?
Well, so, I do want to say Quinnen Williams. We've talked about Quinnen Williams a lot, and Mike Mayock during his press conference stressed the importance of not only getting an edge rush, but when he's
getting some action up the middle too.
Yeah, when he's talked to, quote, top flight quarterbacks around the league, he said that the thing that makes them the most uncomfortable is the interior pass rush. So Quinnen Williams would fit that. But Eddie, we haven't even been here a full day, and the amount of things I've heard just regarding the Cardinals might consider trading Josh Rosen and selecting Kyler Murray, and if Nick Bosa is slated to go first overall, right, that's the projected status, and Kyler ends up going, that throws everything out of whack. And you said earlier today that when we were just, chatting it up a little bit, talking shop, that the draft won't really start until Kyler's gone. And if he's gone at 1, that throws, oh, my goodness, what a curveball.
I mean, we were talking to our Cowboys buddies about this morning, where it's, in my opinion, my humble opinion, not only is Kyler the most intriguing prospect, quote-unquote, in this class, but he really is the kind of linchpin that's going to make everything in this first round go. Because like you said, if he, for whatever reason, were to go 1 in one to Arizona, first off, can you imagine that moment of him going number 1? But after that, hypothetically, he doesn't go 1, right? Let's say he goes at 5. I mean, there's so many – every scenario in this first round – revolves around where he goes.
Yeah. I mean, the quarterback position in general.
Yeah, I mean, if he were to fall, and I'm just throwing out a number there. You know, I don't even know who picks it. If he falls to 22, that becomes the story of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes 2, that becomes the story of the first. Like, he is, in many senses, the first round of the 2019 NFL draft.
Sure. I think we discussed it, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago, that in the last few years, consistently, back-to-back-to-back, there's been one team that's traded up in the top five picks to select a quarterback. And right now, you're looking at all the teams that are in the top five, and they all have established quarterbacks for the most part, right? And you've got the Giants on the outside looking in, the Jaguars, the Broncos, all teams which could very well make the move up into the top five. And if they move in, again, that throws the entire top five of pass rushers out of whack. Quinnen Williams, who's slated to go top five, could drop. Josh Allen, who's slated to go top five, could drop. Nick Bosa. The draft is so unpredictable.
Dude, here's one thing, and I'm just spitballing, because I literally just had this thought. You get a stud at four, right? A stud defensive lineman at four. The Kyler saga keeps playing out. He ends up going wherever he goes. I wonder, and like I said, I'm just throwing this out there. I wonder if Gruden and Mayock package those final two picks to move up to get another stud lineman. Like, there's feasibly a chance that, like, you get your stud at four, but then you move up to 11 or 12 or whatever, and you get another one. You get a second bona fide stud.
Just to reassure that you're hitting on
someone.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard Mayock and Gruden both say that
we're open for business, baby.
Yeah, nothing is out of the question. Gruden's not sticking to his prototypical anything anymore. The league is changing. And Mayock said this morning, it's all about trying to figure out which direction the league is going to go. We've got a good sense so far, but I don't know, man. I mean, it's so funny because it's just that the draft is so unpredictable and everybody tries to predict what's going to happen. And no one ever gets it right.
No. No one. I won't get it right. Maybe you might get it right. You probably have a better shot than I do.
I wish.
But I think that another thing, just going back to Mike for a second, is he talked to the defensive line class incoming. But I think that he also brought up a really good point. It's something that we've talked about a little bit, but I think we've fallen by the wayside a little bit and not giving it its proper due. But he goes, headed into 19, the odds are you're going to have a beast defensive lineman, right? You're adding some new faces to that room in some capacity, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's the free agency, the draft, the first round, the second round, up and down to the seventh round. But, you know, you forget, and I think we've fallen prey to it a little bit, is you forget about the guys already on the roster. You look at an Arden Key, a P.J. Hall, Mo Hurst, who was, I think it's fair to say, the best defensive lineman on the team last year.
Oh, without a doubt.
And, you look at Big Mo taking a step forward, P.J. hopefully being better. Arden, you look at all those chances that Arden was right there in 2018 as a rookie. And Mike said it today. He goes, look, Arden's a guy who probably played too much as a rookie. He was probably asked to do a little too much coming in as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, man, if, you know, I know that we're living in kind of a what-if world right now, but if you hit on Arden, Arden gets better. Mo takes, I think we collectively think Mo's going to be a beast, an absolute monster.
And then
you add a Quinnen Williams, you add a Rashawn Gary, you add a at all. I mean, whoever, right? You had pieces to that, and you got something cooking there.
Definitely. And I mean, we were talking about this the other day. What would your ideal scenario be? Would you rather go into the draft thinking, I'm going to take the best player available, or I'm going to take a guy that fits our system, right? Because realistically, Quinnen Williams is an interior defensive lineman, right? He's not an edge rusher.
Sure.
You've got Justin Ellis on the inside, and you've got Mo and P.J. Hall.
Yeah.
So figuring out how all of this is going to work going forward is also part of the thing that makes it all exciting, right? Figuring out who's going to really contribute and how they're going to fit into Paul Gunther's system. Who knows if we go edge, inside. Either way, it's clear that we just need to add playmakers.
Yeah, I mean, I think – thank you for teaming up on this, by the way. That's producing, Trav. My goodness. I asked Mike Mayock about that. I said, at what point – and it's I kind of wanted like a – I knew I asked the question knowing I wasn't going to get the answer that I wanted, because I asked him, at what point does value kind of supersede team need, right? Which is kind of what you're saying, where you know you're really deep along the interior of the offensive line. But if a guy like, I'm just doing this out there, if Quinnen Williams is sitting there at 24, and there's no way he gets there, right? But in this magical world, at what point do you prioritize the value of the player over a need? And I wanted him to be like, well, to have a formula or something for me. And essentially what Mike said is he said, look, we're not in a position where we can turn down good football players regardless of where they are, regardless of where they line up, what position they're listed as. We need help. And I don't think that's a secret. And so I thought that was interesting that, like you said, having an abundance of riches at one position, I don't think is a bad thing. No. I think in my perfect world, you take the best guy on the board.
Sure. Here's a question for you. I don't know why I haven't thought of this before, but, I mean, in years past, Alabama obviously produces high-level linebackers, right?
Yeah.
No matter who it is, a lot of the linebackers that come out of Alabama succeed in the NFL. They always have beastly defenses, but I can't think off the top of my head a star pass rusher that's come from Alabama.
Oh, man.
Because, I mean, think about you got Dante Hightower on the Patriots, yeah. Linebacker. What else?
Let's actually phone. Since we're doing it live, we're gonna yell at our friends the Cowboys. Hey, Dave Hellman, who's the best pass rusher to come out of Alabama in the past 10 years? Marcell Darius. That's what we're hearing from the Cowboys. That's a great point, though, Kyle. I guess you kind of hit it on the head in the fact that it is hard to kind of think back and find one. But I don't know. I mean, I think coming off a 4-12 season. I know that we've talked defensive line this podcast, but I think you take the best guy on the board. I don't care if he's a left tackle and you took Colton last year. You take the best guy on the board when you pick.
Well, I think to your point, and yeah, we've been talking about the defensive line so much because the majority of the best players on the board will be defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of talked about it a little bit too, where it's you look at the areas of need on this roster, and there certainly are a ton, but I think – maybe position one is defensive line. And like you said, we're here in Indy where a majority of the deepest group is a defensive line group. So you never want to be in the position where you're coming off a 4-12 year. You need a lot of help, especially along the defensive front. But if there's a year where you really can boost up your D-line, this is the year.
Yeah. Let me throw out a scenario for you. We should have asked our friends at the Cowboys, who are two proud LSU alum.
Mm.
If we were to take Devin White, linebacker out of LSU at 4, right? Because it's a thin, very thin inside linebacker draft. Would you be okay doing that and then taking X pass rusher at 24?
I mean, if Mayock and Gruden think that Devin White is the best player on the board when they pick, then yes.
Okay. I mean, I would be happy with it. I think he's a stud.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, dude, we have so many holes that we got to fill.
Exactly.
Especially on that defense. I mean, you just need – this is what you need it for. This is what I want. I don't care what position they play, how they come about, if they put their hand in the dirt, I don't care. You need a playmaker. You need a legitimate playmaker at number 4.
Sure, 100%. But if we have so many holes to fill on the defensive side of the ball and you know that the linebacker position is thin – at the inside spot, right? Name two linebackers any linebacker you've heard out of these two, Devin Bush and Devin White. What other linebackers do you know of in this draft?
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, none are really coming to mind. Yeah, I mean, first-round talent, I don't know, probably not a ton.
Yeah, so if you can address that need early, and then if there's so many defensive linemen that you've got 24 and 27, you can move up and still get another one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, look, we can go through draft scenarios till the cows come home, and I think we probably will, over the next 2 months. But yeah, I mean, I think that you just have to come away with guys that make an impact the moment they walk in the building with those three picks, or whatever those three picks end up being. If it ends up being two picks, one pick, and a future for now, I don't know. Whatever you get from this year's haul of three first rounders, they have to be day one contributors, plug and play, start for 16 games, and we're talking guys that years down the road need to be in Pro Bowl consideration. That's what you need with these three picks. That's what you've kind of mortgaged everything on, is that you hit on these three picks or whatever embodiment they become, but you need playmakers.
Yeah, I'm at the end of the day, it's crazy just to think that we're still in the interview process of the combine, and just in this day alone how much we're questioning, in terms of the podcast we've talked about and a few weeks ago. It's just there's so much change already, and there's so many rumors about what could happen, and It's going to be exciting to see. We haven't even gotten to the drills yet.
I know. It's going to be a blast. Speaking of the drills, the big fellas, the defensive linemen, because we've talked about them so much, they go through their availability on Saturday, and then they hit the field Sunday. So let's do a quick housekeeping deal. So starting tomorrow, Thursday the 28th, running backs, offensive linemen, and select quarterbacks will speak. Friday, quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends, kickers slash punters. Saturday, as we said, the D linemen, the linebackers. Sunday, the day for the DBs. In terms of on-field drills, starting Friday, running backs, offensive linemen, kickers, special teamers. Saturday is the big day. The quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends, so your sexy skill position guys. Sunday, the D-line and the linebackers, as you said, and then the defensive backs wrap it all up on Monday morning here in Indianapolis. But, dude, it's crazy. I mean, you can tell the energy, the everything, the collective feel is picking up here compared to, you know, when we showed up here this morning. But, I mean, we are going to go scenario after scenario after scenario. After scenario after scenario over the next couple months.
That's what makes it fun, man.
I know. It is. That's what makes it a blast. So before we get out of here, Kyle, I have two things that I want to hit on real quick. Number one, Raiders legend Donald Penn hanging out with some Tigers over the weekend.
Where did that happen, by the way?
I believe Don was in Thailand or is in Thailand. Don, please call in if you're listening to this podcast.
What, didn't you say, I remember you telling me earlier in the week, was he in South Korea at one point too?
I think it was just a layover, but yes, I do believe that the great Don Penn was in South Korea for a brief time.
Donald Penn is a global, he's international. He's like Mr. Worldwide.
He is Mr. Worldwide. He is. Would you, you know where my answer is going to be on this.
Oh my God,
but would you ever enter a cage with an unleashed tiger?
No. I can't say I would.
I wouldn't even think about it. Wouldn't even dream. I would spit in your face if you asked me to.
You know, it's, I mean, that tiger, you know, Donald Penn is a big man.
Yeah.
He's a large individual. And I bet, I mean, the tiger looked like it was asleep. But if the tiger wasn't asleep when Don entered the cage.
What if Don startled it?
Well, if he saw Don enter, the tiger's got to be thinking, this guy's, he'd be a good snack.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
Like, just be honest. He'd be a – that's a big guy.
That's a big fella.
Two just behemoths going at each other, a tiger and Donald Ward Penn.
My favorite part of those videos, and I don't know if you can even find them on Instagram anymore because, I mean, Don posted a couple photos, but the stories were so good. My favorite part of the whole thing is how much more confidence Donald gains throughout this interaction because on the first story – he's a little sheepish for good reason. He's kind of creeping in. Oh, what's up, man? What's up? And he's petting the tiger. He's petting the tiger. But you can tell he's a little nervous. By the fourth slide, he's putting his hat on the tiger. He's hugging the tiger. You know, him and the tiger are going to go for a seafood dinner afterwards. They connected on LinkedIn. I mean, like...
Oh, man, I love that because Donald also fed some elephants, did he not?
Yeah, I believe.
I love how he turns to the camera and he just stares at the lens and he goes, I've been dreaming about this since I was a young boy. You dreamed of feeding elephants in Thailand, Donald?
He's had an active imagination. Don't crucify the man for that.
I commend him for it. I'm celebrating it.
What is there any type of animal experience that you'd like to have?
Oh, boy. Any type of animal experience?
Yeah,
I'd
like
to have.
You know, like feeding an elephant, riding an elephant, you know, feeding a tiger.
I already know what you're gonna say to this, but I hate sharks. I hate them. And
I feel like most people do because they don't have a death wish.
Growing up in Southern California, I deliberately never. I mean, I know how to surf. I've learned to surf, but I didn't surf just because I didn't want to encounter a shark.
Did you wear your Thrasher hoodie in the?
Hit a hang loose as I caught the wave. No, I didn't do that.
Johnny Tsunami over here.
I feel like I want to face my fear. So I would consider going in a shark cage in like South Africa and seeing a great white. Trav,
I would do that too. And actually you can go, I think, by the Golden Gate Bridge out those islands out there. I forget what they're called.
God. I know exactly what you're talking
about. I've considered doing it.
You guys are considering that. I'm considering getting a new co-host and a producer for this podcast. I'm going to have someone waiting in the wings while you guys get eaten by sharks, and I have to explain to the good people of Raider Nation why Kyle, Marvin Gaye, and Chardonnay Martin has been mauled by a great white.
I just feel like if I were to go in the shark cage, I'd either die from shock or I die because...
Because a shark would eat you. That's what you would die from. You would die from a shark eating you.
All right.
I'm getting flustered and upset over here, so we're moving on. The other thing I want to hit before we get out of here. Another dear friend of the program, Jalen the Rocket Richard, recently tattooed a man.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Raider Nation for life.
What an artiste. Would you let Jalen ink you up?
I mean, I trust Jalen. I think Jalen's a nice man, but no, I wouldn't want the man. I don't even have any tattoos. I should ask you. You have a little bit of ink, do you not?
I do. Frankly, it's no one's business
sure. About
my body art, but no, I kid. Would I let Jalen tattoo me? How much am I getting paid for this?
None.
Then no.
What if he paid for the tattoo?
That he did?
Yeah, he's... Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be a pass, baby. I don't think so. I mean, that's no shot at Jalen, but I also probably wouldn't want my tattoo guy, you know, lining up in the backfield on 3rd and 6.
True.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know.
Trav, what about you?
Probably not. I definitely would not have him do it, but...
I know we've discussed getting you some body art in the past, Travis.
Yeah,
you wouldn't let the Rocket kind of...
I love Jalen, but no. Sorry.
Yeah. Jalen, please call into this podcast, too, if you're listening, and defend yourself. I don't even know if we have the call-in line set up here in Indy, but please, you have my personal line. Feel free to hit it.
Shameless plug right there.
Shameless plug. Yeah, me and Jalen Richard are tight like that. James Cowser, too, wherever you are. Shia, shia. All right, on that note, we've done enough. What a pod. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow, post-Coach Gruden presser, Coach Gruden one-on-one. Also, I'm going to give a little shine to producer Trav because, let me just, before we get out of here, we shoot the press conference. Trav shoots the press conference and then sprints from the press conference to Lucas Oil Stadium through a maze of tunnels and secret doors to set up the shot so Mike Mayock can just seamlessly sit down, make fun of me a little bit, and get to action.
Well, I did have some help, though. I mean, you did help me.
Thank you. I did help. But I mean...
You know, that's talent right there that, you know, is a team player.
You know I'm no talent. You know that. I'm anything to help. That's all I'm here for. A big we, not me guy, as you guys know. But, yeah, this was fun. We're going to get more of our Cowboys friends in the mix over the next 48 hours as the two most iconic franchises in the NFL join together to... frankly, make everyone else here a little uncomfortable, and that's okay. So, for Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, engineer Jim, Kyle Martin, and Mike Mayock, we will be back tomorrow, same time, same place, coming at you from Indianapolis, Indiana, with yet another Combine edition of Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network.